Good to see you all this morning. You all look very happy, mostly. But if you learned anything from Patsy's children's moment, it's okay not to be happy sometimes. And I appreciate Patsy being willing. We talked about it in the middle of the week. A passage about crying your eyes out is not exactly the most uplifting children's moment. But I think it's an extremely important thing for us to talk about. I want us today to find ourselves thinking about this idea of healing that Jeremiah is seeking, and this idea that Timothy hears from Paul about how we are called to unite because God is the one who unites in Jesus. Uniting is not easy. It's much easier to be apart and separate. We all have demographic, socioeconomic, a number of lines that divide us. And right now, we have some very, very big lines that divide us in this country. Some lines that are political. And yet, here is a passage from Paul to Timothy about how we are called to pray for those who are in leadership. I want to back up just so I can share with you one of my favorite passages from Paul. The verse right before this, in the end of the first chapter of Timothy, it goes like this. Paul is writing to Timothy, who has been prophesied about to be a leader, and he is urging Timothy in different ways to lead the church. And right before he starts getting into the real heart of his message, which is about this unifying and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves, he writes this. I'm giving these instructions, blah, 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 blah. Having faith and good conscience, by rejecting conscience, certain persons have suffered shipwreck in the faith. And here it is. This is one of my favorite parts. Among them, Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have turned over to Satan to be taught not to blaspheme. Y'all watch out, man. You didn't know that was an option, did you? That people could do. You could just be handed over. I remember as a youth minister, that was another one of my favorite lines. Corey, stop it, or I'm going to hand you over to Satan to be taught not to blaspheme. Nothing blasphemous about it. He just wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. I think he eventually figured that out. Paul is so serious, he talks right before getting to the heart of this message about those who have been blaspheming, and so they have been handed over. And so after he kind of gives this subtle sideways warning about those who have fallen by the wayside, he talks about how those in the church, led by Timothy, are to conduct themselves. And what he says is, first and foremost, I want you to pray for those who are in leadership at all levels. Okay, let's be honest. While the Romans may have had some sort of understanding of a republic, they introduced the republic based on the democracy of Greece, the way we conduct our country is very far removed from the way that the Roman Empire was conducted. And yet, we are called to pray for our leaders. What that means, if polls teach us anything this year, is that if you are following Christ, at the end of this national election, you are going to be called to pray for someone you despise. That's it. We are in a season where somebody's going to be a winner, somebody's going to be a loser, and a lot of people, one way or another, are going to be unhappy. I want us as a people to remember that while we do have some strong political leanings in this congregation, that we are called to exist in an economy of love beyond our political preferences. We're supposed to be bigger than this. I'm not telling you don't have an opinion. That's part of this whole human endeavor. What I'm telling you is that ultimately we bow to a bigger God than Washington, D.C. I think one of the reasons we get so wrapped up in wanting to win in our politics is because we somehow have forgotten that's not where our source of healing comes from. Politics seems like an easy fix. If you're unhappy, well, then you just voice your unhappiness and you elect someone else. And if you don't like the way it's run, well, then you just complain. And yet Paul, who was no stranger to complaint, urges prayers of support regardless of whom is in leadership. That's tough. And it's our call. And the reason Paul says that is not just because Paul wants everybody to get along. Paul often doesn't, he wants unity, but just unity for the sake of unity is not really Paul's thing, right? I mean, he's not into whole, like, kumbaya by the fireside. There's a part in this passage to Timothy that explains why Paul thinks it's so important for top-down unity. It's because at the ultimate top of that chain is the one, Jesus Christ, who is human, who unites us all. Not only human, don't get off on that tangent, but who unites us all and who sacrificed for all. And if he sacrificed for all, then that means that he sacrificed for the people we agree with and the people we disagree with. And the people who we cannot even begin to fathom why they would think the way they think. Like their brains got left somewhere else. We are at one of the most divided times. We are at one of the most difficult times. When people are oppressed and killed, and when people feel oppressed and are lashing out in anger. We live in a very divided time. And I am convinced that while we should engage politically, that the answer is never going to come because of who we elect. The answer is going to come because of how we love. Jeremiah was a bullfrog, but besides that, come on, man. You can't just let that one go. He was a good friend of mine. He also had a taste for wine, but that's a whole other side. Jeremiah, often you've heard me talk about him as the weeping prophet. And as I was pondering the sermon this little bit this week, I got a little convicted. Jeremiah was very much in touch with the depth of his emotions. He definitely has this pathos about him where he's a deep feeler. He's an empathizer. He is able, even though he is not bucking against God, to yet weep for those who are being slaughtered. To characterize him only as the weeping prophet, though, is to diminish the fact that he was a very active prophet. He acted when the time was right. But at this moment in this passage from Jeremiah, we have this great line about how he's just so heartbroken. He's just so torn up. He's just so sad, and he's crying. He's got no joy. He's just sick. And he hears the people crying, wondering where God has gone, wondering where the one who's supposed to be ruling, why it doesn't seem like there's a king in Zion. And then we hear from God this reply that, at least in the NRSV, is parenthetical, but it helps make sense. Jeremiah is talking, and then he espouses the cry of the people, and then there is God's response of, why have they provoked me to anger? Why have they worshipped something that's not me? Jeremiah laments because a lot of time has passed. The fall harvest and the spring harvest have both failed, and that means there is a certain crisis facing the people of God. There is an absence of blessing. It is desolation. He hurts and he mourns, and he understands that sometimes, no matter how faithful you are, no matter how much you think you do for God, sometimes you are just broken. And you weep, and you wonder, not if there is a balm, but when the balm will be applied. And that's what he's wondering. He doesn't think God is totally absent, but he is living in this same space we live in, this already not yet. He knows that God is capable of bringing healing, but where is it? Where is the healing? I'm not sure what kind of balm Miss Patsy had earlier. I hope Kenzie didn't put it in her eyes. Good. So, when I was in high school, I got introduced to Tiger Balm. Any of y'all familiar with Tiger Balm? It's like Bengay times 10 at least. I mean, it's vicious. Like a tiger. I was on a ski trip in Colorado with a Methodist church, and all us guys were in the cabin, and we'd been skiing that day. And so if you've been snow skiing much, you know that if you don't ski all the time, it takes you a while. Your shins really hurt because you're supposed to be leaning into your boots all the time. So your shins get really sore. And you know, look, we live in Alabama. It's not like we are out in the snow a lot, right? So you get really sore. So we're sitting there in this cabin. I'm a junior in high school. And one of the leaders, who I later learned, was just, he's just kind of nefarious. I mean, he's just, when I was a youth minister, I later met him at a camp, and there was a kid from his youth group who had a bandage on his leg. I said, "Hey, man, what happened to that kid?" He's like, "Well, he was wearing flammable pants, and I shot a Roman candle at him." I thought, that's pretty awesome. And also, man, how did you not get fired? Not only did you not get fired, but his parents let you bring him to camp after you set him on fire. Do they love him? Yeah, so this guy, he says, "Hey, man, so you're kind of sore. Here's some Tiger Balm. This is really good stuff. It'll really help you feel better. What you want to do is you want to just put a lot of it on, and then you want to rub some water on top of it." I'm not bright sometimes. A good pastoral quality of always believing the best in people is not great sometimes. And so I got this, and I rubbed it all over me. And it started tingling. And then I thought, well, maybe that's what the water's for. Here's the trick. The water makes it worse. So now I'm kind of wet and burning. And so on the one hand, I felt a lot better because I wasn't worried about my muscles anymore. When my brother-in-law used to have migraines, I always offered to kick him in the shin because it would definitely relocate his pain. I was on fire. And every time I hear the word balm, that's what I think of. Because you know what? In some ways, and I was able to go back out and ski the next day, and in some ways, it really works. It's effective, but it's not easy. It's effective, but it comes at a price. Where is the balm for us? The end answer is the balm is the one who came to save all. The balm is Jesus, who is in the world reconciling all things to himself. But in the short term, in a divided and complicated and messy and nasty and mean and broken world, while we are waiting for Jesus to come back, we are the balm. And it is not easy. There's a quote about the church that says, the Christian army is the only army that shoots its own wounded. It's true. Somebody has a problem in church. Man, it's so easy to kick them when they're down. You don't have to stretch your leg as far. When we see our friends, our brothers and sisters who we worship God with, wounded and hurting, it is easier, far easier, and far far more visceral to shoot the wounded. Because then we're able to live into our ideals. What makes being the balm of healing in this world hard is that that means sometimes we have to value people more than ideas. We have to value people more than ourselves. And let's be honest, even if the ideas they support hurt us. No matter who wins this election, and look, by this election, I could mean the October runoff in Pelham. I could mean statewide. I could mean national. No matter who wins, the world is not going to be a significantly better place because of some politician. It's going to be a better place because we start caring more deeply. We start caring until it hurts. Because on the other side of that pain and that fire and that tingling is the beauty and the joy of unity and reconciliation. And that is what we're all called to be. Amen.